This is Democracy,
a podcast that explores the interracial, intergenerational, and intersectional
unheard voices living in the world's
most influential democracy.
Welcome to our new episode of This is Democracy, and Happy New Year. This is our first episode of 2019, and we have the great fortune today of opening with, I think, someone who's one of the most important thinkers about what 2019 has in store for us, my friend Brian Jones. Brian, welcome, Brian.
Thank you. Great to be back.
It's great to have you back on. Brian is an accomplished entrepreneur. He's an expert on economic and technological matters. He's a former swimming star at UT. And he is now in what I think is one of the most important roles in our country. He is the chair of Stand Up Republic, which is an organization which is working to restore our democratic institutions and renew our democratic culture in our society. So we'll talk to Brian in a minute, but of course we start with one of Zachary Suri's poems. Zachary, what's your poem title today?
Reflections on the New Year 2019.
That seems appropriate. All right, well, let's hear it.
December's whip and the January's beat. New Year's go by in a matter of days, a matter of trust in the ticking of the clocks and the crossing offs of the calendars. And we sit in silent corners, rocking chairs by swaying fires, pretending to read, but just staring at the television screen. And in that binge-watching Netflix turn-off-the-news kind of 2018, we were counting bullet holes in the nation to fall asleep at night. And we tried. By God, we tried. And trying to sleep, I have counted backwards from 1,000, losing the numbers at 979, almost asleep. But the light I can't see that shines in the back of my head made me turn around. And out of almost sleeping and looking out the window, the night makes me afraid that I will never sleep, that I will stay here staring out the window at the street for all the hours of the night. This weekend I heard on the radio a show from a year ago, and the voice soothingly wished everyone a happy 2018. And I sighed, and then he said he hoped it would be better than the last, and I laughed. I laughed with my head buried into the television later that night. And we want to escape, to leave the coffin of a 2018 that brought many personal triumphs, but it left us wondering. And wondering if we could even hope for, we wish for, a happy new year. Slowly we come out of the shells, sit on the beach and watch the sun rise, smile at the empty ocean. And back inside we can finally turn the news on again, can breathe sleep through our exhausted souls, and we can wake up in the morning with a different step on the cold floor of our bedrooms.
Very thoughtful, Zachary. What is your message about the new year?
Well, what this poem speaks to, I think, is how the new year is a time of renewal, but also a reflection on the past year and all the emotions that came with it and how just utterly exhausted and tired we are.
And why is that? Why are exhausted souls, as you say?
Well, just like after such a long and tumultuous year to have it over and to be able to rest and reflect on it. It just makes one think about how tired of it all you are.
Well, maybe we'll turn to Brian on that. Why does it feel like we're so exhausted, Brian?
Well, I think, you know, one of the things that's happened in the political system right now is that we've really fallen into this trap of things becoming hyper-partisan, tribal. And so no longer does it feel like we're getting the small wins that we're used to getting, where there is some type of collaboration on moving things forward. And instead, it feels like we're constantly at conflict, whether that's internally within our nation, whether that's externally on economic matters, whether that's externally on more military type conflicts. There just seems to be a lot of tribalism happening right now. And I think to Zachary's point, a lot of that kind of starts to weigh on you as you feel that friction on a regular basis. And you're continuing to see that a little bit into 2019. I think that anybody that thought that things were going to magically get better in 19 is going to be in for a long year.
Right.
The blue wave, the election in 18 showed that there's some movement within the nation to maybe go in a different direction. But we still have the same president and group of advisors. We still have majority Republicans in the Senate. And so you're seeing, and now with the House being led by Democrats, you're starting to see more of that friction where, you know, what was a unanimous vote to open up the budget by the Senate, now that exact same bill passed by the House won't even see the floor.
Right.
And so that type of hyper-partisanship is kind of continuing to really stick in the craw of our nation.
Right. And it seems as if, in a certain way, that partisanship has deepened with not only the election of Democrats, but also with evidence that the country is moving forward in other directions. It's almost as if there are forces trying to hold us back. Do you feel that way?
I think that there is a decent chunk of the population that is afraid of change. And I think that's always been the case, regardless of where you look in history. And we definitely have some trends that are changing pretty quickly, whether that's economic, whether that's social, whether that's demographics. And so you see a lot of people that are really digging in their heels because they're afraid of what things may look like. If you're a coal miner, I read something that was really interesting about this past week about some of the lyrics by Bruce Springsteen in the 1980s.
Sure, sure.
And you read the lyrics, and they're so apropos to today.
Absolutely.
And it's the mills closing, and for the town's whitewashed, and for their downtown is closing,
right.
And those jobs are gone. They're never coming back.
Right.
And that's where we're at again now.
Right.
And it's energy. It's the blue-collar jobs that are changing, and they're changing in location. They're changing in skill sets. They're changing in education required. They're changing in just direction, where coal energy versus green energy is not the way of the future. And
right.
That's if that's all you've ever known and that's what your town's depended on, it's going to be scary.
Sure.
What we have to figure out as a nation and as our political elected officials have to figure out is not how do we embrace that fear, but how do we get in front of it? How do we give them the lifelines and the opportunities and show them the way up and out so that they don't feel that the only way to survive is to act like nothing is changing.
Right, right. It does seem as if it's a combination of fear and, as you said, almost tribalism and conflict that's dominating our news every day. Do you believe this is something that, and in your work at Stand Up Republic, do you see this as something that permeates all levels of our society, or is it something more evident at the national than at the local level?
That's a good question. I don't know if I've seen anything on the local level that really gets into that when you start looking at, you know, city councils and the way that they're interacting. I do think that you see it on a state level. And I think you've seen some really interesting places where that's played out recently that will lead to some of the things that hopefully get fixed in the next couple of years. But, you know, in your old home state of Wisconsin,
sure.
You had the elected officials, including the governor, going and making some midnight heroics to change what was the will of the populace. In Michigan, you had a very similar situation, but the governor vetoed
right.
Those changes.
Right. These were efforts to change the power of the governor after the Republican Party lost the governor's seat.
And in Michigan, to almost override a referendum on the state ballot.
Right.
And so you have these massive power plays that are very much tribalism in nature, where people have spoken. And I think that's the thing that I think gives me the most hope is I think in the polling that I've seen is that, you know, 70 to 80% of the population is probably more aligned than what the politicals think
right.
that they are.
Right.
And everything from, you know, little things like, you know, universal background checks on gun control, I think is 97% now
wow.
that the U.S. population
wow.
approves that.
Wow.
And that's something where it's like, all right, like, but if you only read the national news and you only listened to what our officials on Capitol Hill said, you would think that it was, you know, 30%.
Right.
And that there is this huge rift. And I think that on a lot of these issues that people do, in fact, want to come together and are more aligned than what you would read.
Right. Which is why I asked that question. I mean, it does seem to me sometimes, Brian, that, and I think this shows up in the polling, that people are more divided on the party and the leader whether they like the president or don't like the president, whether they like a governor or don't like a governor, than they are on the issues when you drill down. Healthcare seems to be another one, right? There might be differences on universal healthcare, but a large proportion of the population actually likes the idea of the government providing and helping with healthcare, right?
Absolutely. And one of the things that's been really interesting over the past couple of years is when you pull issues out of those tribal mechanisms and you have a discussion on the basis of that topic,
right,
the outcomes are almost shocking. So we mentioned it briefly the last time I was here, but, you know, Florida,
right,
where Florida can't have an election if it doesn't end up in almost a tie ever.
Right.
And 60%+ voted to restore disenfranchised voting rights.
Right.
In Missouri, you saw elections where they passed things that you would never expect, expanding Medicaid, that you would never expect to be in what's considered to be a pretty red state.
Right.
And, you know, but when you pull it out,
yeah,
and you say, okay, well, listen, what's really happening here? Forget the R, forget the D, forget who the spokespeople and their personalities are. But let's talk about this issue. Does it make sense to whatever the issue is? I think people all of a sudden put down that guard, that tribalism,
right.
And go, okay, well, let me think, because we've gotten to the point where that identity politics plays such a big part of things. And as a plank of a party, this is what we're against.
Right.
Okay, well, without being a well-informed, I've got a bunch of time to dive into this issue, I'm going to rely on my proxy. My proxy is my party. My party says this. And what people don't realize is that a lot of times those planks and those people may not necessarily be looking at it as a way to pull everybody together, but maybe looking at it as a way to make it divisive and to make it easier to fundraise and continue to be out there in front, and because it's earned media.
Right, right. So the representative figure is not actually representing the policy interests of the public.
Right.
Do you see that changing? I mean, it seems to me, Brian, there's a lot of evidence that in spite of the challenges that we continue to face that you've outlined so well, that we do have perhaps a new generation of leaders coming into power, certainly looking at the U.S. Congress, the House of Representatives today, looking at state governments, looking at a state like Florida that, as you pointed out, will, starting on January 9th, be registering about 1 million felons, potentially, who couldn't vote, who now will be able to vote, many of whom are minorities. I mean, do you really see change happening at that level?
Yeah, there's a lot that is happening. If you look at, to your point, the class of elected officials that just joined Capitol Hill. Like, there's a lot more diversity. There's a younger group.
Two Muslim women in particular, first two ever elected to the House.
Yeah. And in Texas, you had a couple of Hispanic women that were elected for the first time. And so there's things that are definitely changing. Now, I think that you still have to be cognizant of the fact that, you know, just because there's new faces doesn't mean that things change, right? Like, I don't see 2019 being a massive shift in the way that everything occurs. But I think it is kind of the light at the end of the tunnel. And on the state level, I think that you're starting to see some of that as well, where back in November, I think, well, between May and November, I think there were 5 states that decided to move away from partisan gerrymandering and to go to nonpartisan districting. And I think that that's a great thing. To have 10% of the states decide and say, listen, we don't want this to be hyper political anymore. We want this to be something where we at least try to make it fair, as much as politics can be fair. And actually, I think one of the things that I thought was the most inspiring for me for 2019 is that the very first House resolution, HR1, has a ton of pieces in it that are great for democracy. Everything from strengthening the electoral, so guaranteed vote by mail, being able to have a federal holiday for elections, looking at gerrymandering, looking at campaign donations, trying to get rid of and address some of the dark money in PACs and super PACs and C4s, to also requiring, you know, ethics training and,
right,
and
right,
things that
right.
you would think would be non-controversial. And I'm going to be really interested to see how that plays out because right. for the most part, again, taking off your political hyper-partisan tribal hat, there are things that we should be able to agree upon
right.
where the more people that vote, that's a good thing. The easier it is for people to get valid IDs, the better that is. The ability for people not to have to miss work and get penalized and wait 2.5 hours in line to vote.
Sure.
Like, that should be something that we all should be able to lock arms
right.
on and agree.
Right.
So how they frame this and how that conversation goes will be really interesting because I'm fascinated by somebody if it comes out and will honestly on the floor say, I want it to be harder for
right.
people to vote. I
right.
don't like democracy. I like it the way it is. Let's leave it at, like, I just, that's such a interesting opinion for somebody to take where I just want to see how that's received.
Right. I mean, it's extraordinary in some ways, despite all the partisanship, despite all the ugliness, how many interesting ideas have been put on the table. They won't be acted on immediately, but they're on the table now. There's also been a proposal for a constitutional amendment to eliminate the Electoral College. Another proposal, in fact, coming from Republicans to create term limits in the Senate. So there are a lot of really interesting ideas that many of us have been talking about in the academic world that are now getting talked about in Congress and elsewhere. And that's probably because of the new people who have come into office, right?
Yeah, I think that it's partly because of the new people and partly because you can read the tea leaves and mm-hmm. see what's happening here. And so rather than trying to continue the old ways, there are now, even in people that have been there for a while, saying, okay, well, if times are changing, I better be rolling along with
right.
them and
right.
make those types of changes. And I think that that's what you're seeing, where people are looking at it. And, you know, you and I have had conversations about the statistics about what percentage of millennials believe a democracy is the best governance out there. And one of the things that has been very clear is that democracy as it has been for the last 10 years is a frustrating
yes.
viewpoint. And if your only view of democracy has been the last 10 years, you probably think it doesn't work that great.
It doesn't.
And between the gridlock and the animosity and the hyper-partisanship. And so I think that a lot of people are kind of sensing that frustration and saying, well, how do we clear the lanes to get things done? And I know that the tendency is to idealistically look back on the past. And obviously you read some of the debates and you read the tension. Things weren't always great.
No.
This isn't by far the worst it's ever been. But I do think that there has been points in the past where you could get to come together and find common ground and say, how do we address this?
Right.
And how do we get fresh ideas, fresh people
right.
and say, let's find the 80% that we agree on and let's get that done. And then we'll focus on the remaining 20
absolutely.
At a later date, as opposed to we're not addressing any of it now
right.
because we don't agree on that 20%.
And what's interesting, we've talked about this on the show, is that the moments of hyper-partisanship, the moments of hyper-division are usually the ones that then produce the rapid moments of change as people do come together because they're fed up, but also because they recognize the problems in a way people can see a lot of the problems with gerrymandering and unrepresentative government that you've pointed to here. So for many of our listeners, Brian, who care about this and want to make a difference, let's spend the last couple of minutes now talking about that. What are the things that you as a scholar of these issues, as the chair of Stand Up Republic, as a political activist, and as someone who yourself really crosses between parties? Stand Up Republic was actually founded by Evan McMullen, who was a Republican, ran as a sort of independent Republican. What are the things you see that young people in particular can do right now to be a part of this positive change?
Right. Yeah. So Stand Up Republic is what we consider to be a cross-partisan organization. Our goal is to put forward ideas and hopefully policies that can be embraced by whichever party that is, whether you're an R, a D, a Libertarian, Green Party. These are common ideals and norms that
right.
we should be embracing. And part of that is, you know, strengthening the electoral
yes.
process, making it easier for citizens to vote. Part of it is protecting the Constitution, so freedom of speech. And we're seeing that play out today where, you know, we have a primetime speech happening this evening by our president, and watching the press figure out how to
right.
address that is a really interesting challenge. And our press need our support. When you have tweets coming out that the press is the enemy of the people,
right.
which is propaganda typically used by authoritarian leaders, somebody needs to step up and be able to say, hey, listen, that's not how we talk
right.
about the press here.
Right.
Looking at the independence of the judiciary and the Department of Justice, and not allowing those to become partisan and not allowing them to become part of a political weaponized machinery. So those are some of the things that we're looking at within Stand Up Republic that I think are really important mm-hmm. as we look for the next 2 to 20
right.
years out. For individuals, I think the biggest thing is to get involved.
Yes.
And to look at both state, local, and national issues and realize that their voice does matter, not only during the elections. Of
right.
course, everybody, you know, for the last however many years is saying, you know, your vote matters, get
sure.
out there.
Sure.
As we get to see more of these races become tighter as gerrymandering goes away, you know, you're going to see more races where it really is important to
Absolutely.
Show up and vote, and hopefully people embrace that. But it's also, democracy is not something that happens once every 2 to 4 years, and,
right.
and on that day you get involved, and then the rest of the time everything calms down. I think it's really important that as issues pop up, that there is a way to be activated, and that you become involved enough to know how to be activated. And so you talked about healthcare. I think one of the most interesting things over the past 12 months was the response around the Affordable Care Act.
Yes.
And how many people called and emailed and faxed and wrote letters of support and said, hey, listen, this is what's happening here. And all of a sudden I have cancer, I have diabetes, I have COPD, I have diseases that would have prevented me from getting insurance or would have bankrupted
right,
me
right.
if I didn't have insurance. And now I can get insurance and I don't have to worry about these economic disadvantages just because something unfortunate happened in my genetic code.
Right, right.
And I think that's really important that people continue to see that and get engaged, because when the voice of the American people is heard, I think you see action, or at least you see the beginnings of people saying, oh, wow, people are talking, people are having opinions on this, and we should listen to them. And I think that's the best thing about our democracy, is that voice of the people usually resonates, and I think does resonate, and hopefully will continue to resonate.
I think it's a great point. I think even in a time that feels exhausting and frustrating, as Zachary was referring to in his poem, it's absolutely crucial that people get more involved, not less involved, and as you said, make their voices heard, and not simply in condemning leaders that we don't like, but actually talking about the issues and educating people, in a sense, filling the space that's not being filled by leaders who are telling lies,
right.
actually putting facts out there, putting real information, whether it's climate change, health care, the real treatment of our immigrants and things of that sort, really getting serious information out there.
Yeah, I think if there were two specific action items, I would say
Please.
Is, one is, don't stay holed up in social media. There is a
Put
lot.
Put down your phone.
And realize that even if you're on it, that not all the information is true and factual.
Right.
There is a
Unless
lot
it's our podcast.
Unless it's our podcast. There's a lot of information out there about how disinformation is being spread.
Yes.
And people are looking at quick bites of information and thinking that that's the whole truth and the only truth. And we're finding out that that's not the case. And so I think that one thing is just, you know, don't necessarily believe everything you read online, to get out of the anonymous ability to be online and to be a keyboard warrior and
right.
go and have conversations and realize
yes.
that even if somebody disagrees with you on a political issue, that they're not a bad person,
right.
that you may just disagree with them on that issue. And then the second big piece of it is, be proactive on what you're for. There's a lot of people that are, to your point, I'm against
yes.
this, I'm against that. that's a really backwards-looking negative view of the world. And if we're going to continue to advance, it's what are you for? And being able to advocate positive change and say, this is how I view where we should go, and coming up with solutions and opportunities for these problems that we face and address, that's a much more productive view of the world. And I think flips the narrative, where instead of it being a negative where right. everything bad is happening and I'm against everything that's happening, is, okay, here's one or two issues that I really passionately care about. How do I get involved? And what do I want to see happen that are positive? And again, that could be healthcare, it could be gun control, it could be debt, it could be immigration. But what would you like to see?
Right.
And go make that change.
Right. Right. Zachary, does this resonate with you? Is it possible, in spite of all the exhaustion and complication, is it possible among your friends and other young people to have a positive conversation about our politics and to see positive ways forward?
I think it really is possible, and I think it just requires leaving that sort of partisan sphere on the part of both those who are involved, but also those who are in power. And I think it also shows us how important it is to work on these issues today, because I think part of the reason we're in such a partisan time today is because the seeds of this moment were planted 20 years ago, and that it shows us that it's really important today to be active about protecting our democracy and making sure that issues we care about are heard about.
Right, right. Well, I think that's a perfect spot for us to close today. I think Brian and Zachary have both highlighted the realistic challenges we face. As we're recording this podcast, part of the U.S. government is shut down. Right now, people are dealing with a government that doesn't seem to work at many levels. But at the same time, there's all this new energy, all these new individuals in our politics, and so many good ideas out there. And if anything, 2019 is going to be a year when the opportunities for activism and the opportunities to speak out for what we believe and pursue what we care about, I think, should be greater than they've been in a long time. Out of difficulty comes great opportunity. And I think Brian and Zachary have given us a good hold on understanding that. So thank you for joining us today, Brian.
Absolutely. Thank you for inviting me back.
It's great to have you on. And Zachary, thank you for your poem. Please continue to listen to This Is Democracy. We are your source on democratic activism and political thinking, not partisan thinking, but historical thinking that helps to renew our democracy. And we will be with you every week this year. Thank you very much, and see you soon.
This podcast is produced by the Liberal Arts Development Studio and the College of Liberal Arts at the University of Texas at Austin.
The music in this episode was written and recorded by Harrison Lemke, and you can find his music at harrisonlemke.com.
Subscribe and stay tuned for a new episode every Thursday featuring new perspectives on democracy.